January is when we recommit to the habits that support our health and well-being. And naturally, we start looking at what can support those goals, including supplements. But choosing the right supplements can be confusing, because not only are there so many brands out there, the supplement industry itself is a low-trust category. It's lightly regulated, products are easy to make, and companies don't even have to list everything on their label. Now, there's Momentous. They've become the high-trust brand in a low-trust category. They weren't satisfied with the industry standard, so they built the Momentous standard, their commitment to doing things the right way, not the easy way. Momentous sources the highest quality ingredients on the planet. Their whey protein comes from grass-fed European dairy cows. Their creatine uses the purest form of creatine monohydrate, and every formula is made with clinically backed, highly bioavailable nutrients, with no fillers and no artificial sweeteners. Right now, Momentous is offering listeners up to 35% off your first order with promo code AudioBoom. Head to livemomentous.com and use promo code AudioBoom for up to 35% off your first order. That's livemomentous.com, promo code AudioBoom.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Dr. Brenda Schaefer at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, a senior fellow, publishing a portion of her new book, Iran is More Than Persia. This is a very careful illustration that the country we generally name as the Islamic Republic of Iran, an adversary of the United States, is the product of centuries, millennium of invasion, organization, empire, failure, ambition, migration, centuries, millennia. We're looking at something that is not easily generalized, and we're about to identify the detail of a potential, possible future for Iran that involves empowering the people who identify themselves with their heritages, which is something we in America find normal. Obvious, where your people's came from, Europe or Africa or Asia. In Iran, it is suppressed. Brenda, a very good evening to you. Thank you. I take you immediately to that word suppressed. And there's a fact inside your very careful illustration that I found jolting, but then again, it makes perfect sense. The Kurds who live in Iran are 70% of the judicial execution, 70%. The Kurds and the Turks are especially suppressed. And when the regime suppresses them, threatens them, charges them with crimes that will lead to imprisonment, they use the language war against God. Why do they do that? Good evening to you, Brenda.
Good evening, John. Well, yeah, Iran has kind of a dual policy. On one hand, they say we don't really have ethnic issues. And in fact, the ethnic minorities are not truly other ethnic groups. They're just peoples that lost their Persian language under different invasions and as you said, different migrations. But on the other hand, the regime acts with a very, you know, aggressive stance against the minorities. As you said, the largest amount of judicial executions, the largest amount of political prisoners are all from Iran's ethnic minorities. The regime reaches its hand abroad and assassinates and kidnaps leaders of these ethnic movements. The last most high-profile one was the kidnapping of an Arab minority leader that was visiting in Istanbul, and you know was captured and brought beyond the border into Iran. So, on one hand, they say they have no ethnic problem. On the other hand, they work very hard to suppress Iran's ethnic minorities.
With religion, that's what's so striking here. They could charge any of these young people as practicing dissent or what the Chinese call splitism. You know, the idea that you live in a region and you're not pledged to the center or to Beijing. War against God, though. Why do they choose religion? How does that help them, Brenda?
Because I think then if it was about separatism, they would have to acknowledge that they actually have a problem. But when you make it these crimes like war against God, it's kind of hard to say that you actually have a problem that's based in the real world, that's based, you know, that's based on territory. And in fact, the regime is getting stricter and stricter on its programs to suppress the minorities. It used to be that, well, they wouldn't allow the minorities to operate schools in their languages or to use institutions, in government institutions, but they would allow on the basic, you know, human level people to use their language. Well, in 2019, the Iranian Ministry of Education decided that when kids show up for first grade, they have to take a proficiency test in Persian. And if they don't fail it, if they fail the Persian test, they go to special education for slow learners, for hearing impaired, which is clearly not the reason that they don't, you know Persian. And so they're forcing now people in their homes to start speaking to their children in a language, you know, in a foreign language. This is really, you know, invading even into the home cultures in Iran.
Having established that the regime, the dictatorship, the mullahs fear the ethnic identities, let's do some numbers. According to the regime's own reporting, Persians are less than half the population of 85 million. The Persians are concentrated in central Iran, around Tehran. Brenda reports the provinces, Isfahan, Tehran, North Khorasan, Semnan, Qum, Central Kerman, Hormozgan, and Yazd. That's central Tehran, central Iran. However, when you look at all the borderland, east and west, north and south, what you have is the dominant ethnic minorities. Everybody in Iran knows this. It's just that the U.S., when it approaches the adversary at the table, such as a conversation about the suspect nuclear weapons program, it treats it as one great big country. It's not. I wonder if the ethnic minorities smile, Brenda, when they hear the U.S. Talk about Tehran as of one persuasion or one opinion. Let's choose most notably the Azerbaijanis, because you and I both travel there, and I've been there enough near to understand that the border with Azerbaijan and Iran is not a border between adversaries, but in fact, no border at all, because the Azeris who live in east and west Azerbaijan's province of Iran are very close to, in fact, entirely identify with the Azerbaijans who are in the Republic of Azerbaijan. Are the Azerbaijanis a distinct minority enough so that they're suppressed as well? Is their language also suppressed in west and east Azerbaijan province?
So John, I think you point out a really important approach to many, many Westerners that are looking at Iran, and especially Western journalists, that they focus on Tehran, and that's very different than most of Iran. And it would be as if, you know, some journalist came to the U.S. and spent a few days in New York and a few days in Los Angeles and said, wow, I understand America. This is what America thinks, right? And not going to the Midwest, to the South, and speaking to people, seeing how they live in, you know, America is such a diverse country, but Iran is probably even more diverse, like as we pointed out, that even by Iranian internal data, right? Like not even something that's, you know, not what independent academics or scientists think, but on its own internal data, at least 40% of the population is not fluent in the Persian language, right? So can you imagine a situation in the United States where 40% were not fluent in English, what that would mean. But in terms of, and I think in terms of your point about the different minorities, not only do they have different cultures, different points of view, but they even have different views on foreign policy. So take, for instance, the Iranian, nuclear deal. I think Washington, the current, the Biden administration, believes that most of the Iranian people would support removal of sanctions. You know, most of the Iranian people identify with the regime's views on the West or Israel. But when you follow, for instance, media of the ethnic Azerbaijanis in Iran, they see it completely different. You know, that they call in and to radio shows here, you know, being broadcast in the United States and talk about, for instance, that they're very friendly towards Israel because Israel helped the Republic of Azerbaijan in the recent war, which you reported on in the past, between Azerbaijan and Armenia, or that they support sanctions remaining on Iran, even though it's difficult, you know, for the economy of Iran, because they said that money's not going to trickle down. It's not going to help people. It's, you know, it's only going to stay with the mullahs in Tehran, and so they have no interest in sanction removal. So I think from, you know, Washington's perspective, you have to realize that Iran is a very, very diverse country. And also, I think that the regime is a lot weaker than someone who would come to Tehran would perceive. You know, if they go to Tabriz or if they go to Ahwaz or other cities in the provinces, they would have a different view of Iran.
I puzzled when we saw a video of Azeris driving to the border with Azerbaijan and where Nagorno-Karabakh enters in, because that's part of Azerbaijan, and cheering in the distance across the river Azerbaijan soldiers as they were moving through a settlement in the recent war. I puzzled about it because I thought, hey, this is a dictatorship. That's an obvious demonstration of alienation from center. You're rooting for Azerbaijan, which is allied with Israel, which is allied with the United States. It makes much more sense now that I understand that the Persians do not have control of the border provinces. We're talking about the Azerbaijanis, but let's go through the Azeris, the Kurds, that's the Iraq border, and the Turkish border. The Awaz Arabs, that's the Iraq border. The Lurs, that's the north, the Zagros Mountains. The Turkmen, who also lip over into Turkmenistan. In other words, I can look at the whole border of Iran. You have maps in your presentation for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. The whole border is not loyal to the center. That's what I would conclude. And that would be why they continue to suppress it, suppress language, suppress anybody who forms what you'd have to say is a political organization that wants to celebrate our roots. Brenda, I think the conclusion I come from reading my first pass of these numbers is that loyalty in Iran is not assumed by Tehran itself. Is that fair to say that they doubt people when they come from the border region? They doubt them right away and they put them through, I guess, loyalty tests.
Unquestionably, John. I mean, they are aware. Again, my study, this stage of my study was based on Iranian data itself, Iranian government data, Iranian statements. They're unquestionably aware and report internally on, you know, on having an ethnic problem. And I think on, you know, the issues of the borders, almost on a number of Iran's borders, you could say it's complete open insurgency. So these are the borders, as you mentioned, with Iraq and Turkey and with Pakistan. So on a monthly basis, you know, 3 to 4 Iranian soldiers or IRGC corps are killed at these borders, and they're in a sense, you know, lawless, that Iran doesn't control those borders. This was maybe has been manageable for Iran because, well, there's mainly, you know, hardly any Persians living there. They're not centers of the economic activity of the regime. But there's been two developments in recent years that make the situation much more acute for the regime in Iran. So one is that a real huge increase in the number of violent attacks instituted by Ahwazi Arabs in the Khuzestan region, you know, attacking IRGC events, attacking Iranian soldiers, high numbers of casualties. So, you know, Khuzestan is the center of Iran's oil and gas production. It's the two of Iran's main ports. It's a real node of Iran's roads. So even though the Ahwazi Arabs are maybe only 3 to 4 or 5 million in Iran, they sit in two really, really important areas, Khuzestan and Bandar Abbas, which are central to Iran's oil production. And then second, as we discussed before, it's the Azerbaijanis. So if Iran was to lose the majority of their loyalty, this would be very similar to what happened with the USSR and the loss of Ukraine. You know, as long as kind of the USSR had Ukraine and Belarus and Kazakhstan, these big, you know, these big countries, sort of still supporting the union, it was manageable. The Georgians and the Estonians could kind of do their thing, and the Moscow could still manage it. But if indeed this war, this 2020 war between Armenia and Azerbaijan, has really inspired the ethnic Azerbaijanis in Iran to work against the regime, and I think you and I have the same impression by seeing these, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of people going to the border area, violating the regime's orders, and, you know, cheering on the soldiers there, and seeing that their own regime, you know, all the Russian military aid to Armenia during the war, all of it went either by air, you know, through Iranian airspace, or by sea to Iranian ports on the Iranian port on the Caspian Sea, and then brought by truck. We have this, you know, documented trucks going from Anzali port, you know, into the border crossing with Armenia. So if this is just like it's been for the past 20 years, which is insurgencies of Kurds and Baluch, it's probably manageable to the regime. But if the minute the Ahwazis and certainly the Azerbaijanis join it, then the regime really has a problem.
Brenda Schaefer of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, her new book is Iran is More Than Persia, and she's published a piece of it that's available online now. When we come back, some policy recommendations for Europe and the United States in this adversarial relationship with the Tehran mullahs. We're not talking about all of the country, the Tehran mullahs. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Are you a fraud-paying American? One in four tax-paying Americans has been a victim of identity fraud. With LifeLock, if your identity is stolen, they fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Last year, billions in refunds were stolen. Could be from your salary, overtime, or second job. Gone. But this year, you don't need to stay a victim. Because this tax season, fraud-paying American is something no American should have to claim. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.